How was the process of becoming the director of the Broad? How did they approach you, or how did that whole long path begin?
Yeah, I think it's specific to the United States. I mean, it exists elsewhere, but here it's more like headhunters that contact you, and then you go through the whole process with them. So it's very interesting. It's a different process than in Europe, where you know they approach you, but the museum is approaching you. They ask you to send some material. You make a proposal, and then you have an interview if you have like shortlisted to the last four, and then you have 1 hour interview, and that's it. Here it's different. It's like 2 days of interview starting in the morning, you know. I think it's very interesting. It gives you opportunities to say different things, to go to a much deeper level, I think. And I of course, it's more efforts, but I appreciate this this approach, I have to say.
Is it also different because the Broad is attached to Michigan State University and just a museum attached to university? I don't think in your past, have you ever had an association like that before?
I mean, with university, I always worked with universities. Even when I started created my first art center in Switzerland, I always worked closely with not only university, but any research structure. Could be private structure. I worked with, for example, the research team of Ducati, the motorbike, or with specialized infrared camera working for Hollywood. Not linked to university, but always linked with research. And of course, university, but mostly with like philosophers, sociologists, and when it comes to scientific research, most of the time was with private labs. But, you know, for me, it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, that's right, because you had the association with CERN as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I work with some artists at CERN, for example, Gianni Motti. He's a fantastic artist. He was right before the CERN opened, so he got the authorization to go inside the tunnel, the Large Hadron Particle, which is 25 kilometers. Sorry, I'm still in metric. And instead of, you know, like going at the speed of light, just walk. So 5 hours walk through the tunnel, and the video is 5 hours, and you just see the back of Gianni Motti walking through the tunnel. I think it's really great because it gives you a perspective on time. You know, it's not slow motion, it goes at its own pace, but then you realize the electron is also going at its own pace, just faster.
Here in East Lansing, I would say, in my experience at least so far, is there seem to be three distinct kind of branches of the area, of the population. There's the day-to-day life, and then there's also the university group, the students, and then we have the added benefit of being the state capital of Michigan as well, so right down the way. So the politicians also enter into this community. How do you serve those kind of three branches? Has that come into your model of your vision so far?
Yeah, of course. I haven't been here long enough to experience this different type of audience. I have to say, at Palais de Tokyo, for example, my biggest effort was to multiply the type of audiences. We have, of course, the contemporary art around the world, international crowd, but each exhibition we try to bring new type of audience through comics, through certain like music, classical, or having artists like writing new operas, but also having death punk, metal, rock bands, and also theater, ballet, but also like street dance. We had like a chainsaw international competition. We had all type of activities, but also, of course, always linked with contemporary art. And I have to say, and this has always been my motivation, everything we do is done through the lens of the artist, through the eyes of the artist. So it's about how to be creative, not within a specific cycle. It's how to be creative with everything you have. And here, of course, it's not only university, as you just said, it's much more than that. So the challenge here, of course, it's to understand. I mean, I haven't been long enough here to fully understand, but how can we play with all these audiences, always with this creative mind and with artists? So I will invite artists working here on site with this in mind, that different audiences are here, different communities are here, even the campus has different communities. So for me, it's just natural to think about that.
In your mind, is there a big difference between being a curator and just being essentially an evangelist for art?
Well, yeah, there is a big difference. An evangelist has, I mean, hopefully, met the truth, you know, somehow, somewhere. You know, he encounter some transcendental experience, and he wants to share it. A curator, once you deal with contemporary art, but I mean, once you deal with philosophy, with any type of art, you know there is no such a thing as one truth. There are many, which means this is what I call the schizophrenic quotient, when a good artwork can bear many types of interpretation. And the more layers of interpretation you can bring on an artwork without it to fall apart, then it's a good artwork. If you have one, two interpretations, maybe it's just like an ordinary object. Three, four, maybe a good design object. Five, six, 10, 20, then it starts to be a very interesting artwork.
When you have those multiple layers of meaning, for the most part, I would say that that art has those meanings at that time that it was created, but as time goes on, people tend to lose that perspective of the full layers that are going on. How do you look forward while dealing with art that's created in that moment?
Well, when you talk with artists, I mean, strategically, sometimes they come up with one interpretation because it's a key access. It's an access key that gives you, you know, like a way to understand what the artist wants to do. But if you say to the artist, "Yeah, hello, I see this work in this way," they say, "Yeah, good for you. You know, like you just need a good key." You know, it's just a question of building doors to enter the building. So you can enter through the main door, or you can enter through the window or the back door. You know, it's no problem. The important thing is you go in and then you visit the house. So I think that is important. And historically, I mean, masterworks have always been works that renew its interpretation. Think about Marcel Duchamp, for example. Every 10 years, from any decade in the 20th century, artists rediscovered Duchamp through the lens of surrealism, through the lens of conceptualism, through the lens of any different interpretation. Duchamp was always there. And that's the mark of a masterpiece, an artwork that always renews his interpretation.
After you left the Palais de Tokyo in Paris, and you founded the Chalet Society, and now you're coming back into a semi-established museum, what are the lessons that you're taking from that in order to move kind of curation and museum partnerships forward?
Well, for me, after Palais de Tokyo, I was wondering, okay, now if I have to take over another institution, what would it be? And I didn't have any answer. So I thought, you know, like, what's the best? And if you have the chance of creating from scratch a contemporary art institution, what it would be? I didn't have any answer, so I thought, okay, why not like creating your own structure that would allow you to test new ideas, new challenges? Because one thing is sure, nowadays everybody in the art world is aware that the museum as we know it today is going to change. I mean, the museum has been until now based on a model from the 19th century, even like 18th century, hasn't changed much. But nowadays, with the new challenges, technological challenges, social challenges, political challenges, the museum, and economical, of course, the museum is going to change. How, we don't know, but I mean, what is interesting is having a structure that allow you to test all these issues. So the Challis Society is born with this idea of being able to test. So it's a lab that starts from the idea of what if we consider the museum not as a hardware anymore, like a platform, but as a software? What does it change in our way of doing things? And of course, you know, like everything, I have a challenge. I think, you know, like what outside the contemporary art world would I find a structure that already had this type of challenge and solved it? So of course, the computer system saw that change where the hardware before was like ruling over the software, and of course, as we know, the software won over the hardware. So can a museum be like a software and adapt without changing its identity on different type of platforms? So that's the challenge. That's what we have tried to test over the year, testing the notion of the artwork, testing the notion of the artist, testing the notion of the exhibition, and the last test is testing the notion of the institution. And once I've done that, for me, I was ready to go back to the institution with that type of experience.
In the history of the Broad, obviously it was a little more than a year ago that the founding director, Michael Rush, passed away. Did you know him, or did you have a conception of his vision as he began and obviously didn't finish what he had kind of started the path on?
I never had the opportunity to work with him, unfortunately, but that's one thing is sure. I mean, everything I will do here is influenced by his vision. He's the founding director. He started the identity of the Broad. So my challenge, my role is to take this vision and see how to bring it to the next level, which of course would correspond also to my vision. So without changing anything, trying to understand and see how it could evolve. Also, you know, like with the new artist, the changing technologies. So it's a work in progress.
Marc-Olivier Waller, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for being here.
For Current State, I'm Jamie Paisley.